What's up?
Hey, folks, Jerry here. Welcome to the Pioneers of Insight podcast, a show that explores the wipeouts, crackups, and recoveries of inspiring and influential people. Here you'll get the stories of the quest to find success beyond the struggle and the great leaps of innovation that take us there. People that sound like this.
JLD.
What's up,
Jerry?
What's up, man? What's up, brother?
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm excited to be here, Jerry. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Fun today.
Keep telling your story as well.
Yeah, man.
How you doing?
Doing good. You look fantastic.
Oh, good. I didn't shower, but I did comb my hair.
You dress up nice.
Today, we deep dive the life story of Brent Gleason, who faced 9/11 and the death of a training buddy after leaving his job in finance to become a Navy SEAL. All right, folks, strap in for a story about death, coming apart, and back together again when love has your number.
And it's getting raw, baby.
It's going to be awesome. This is definitely a vulnerability sandwich show, for sure.
I love it.
Brent Gleason, welcome to the Pioneers of Insight podcast. Happy to have you here.
Thanks so much. I've been looking forward to it for a while now, so I'm honored to be on the show.
You have a lot of qualifiers to your name. CEO, business owner, you're an entrepreneur, you're a leader, you're a Navy SEAL retired. But what would be interesting for our guests is to hear, how do you see what you do each and every day?
I think if I had to remove myself from it and take a different viewpoint outward looking in, I would definitely say I'm probably my own worst critic. I'm definitely typically never satisfied with where I am in the journey, where my career is. How good of a speaker I am, how good of a writer I am, how good of a husband and father I am, which I think in a way is to a healthy degree. It's a way of being in a constant state of self-improvement and self-analysis. So I don't think it's necessarily in a negative, unhealthy light. But I think that when I reflect on what I'm doing and where I'm going, I always try to make sure that it's in line with, one, my set of core values, and two, because oftentimes we're kind of the architects of our own beliefs and we're going down a path and a journey seeking certain goals and a certain mission narrative. And sometimes we realize that maybe we're seeking certain goals for the wrong reasons or based on a set of values we don't really even want to hold on to. So I think that life in general is a constant transformation, or should be in a little bit of a constant transformation and self-analysis. You definitely learn that process in SEAL training and being in the team and special operations. And if you're not in a constant state of self-analysis, your peers will hold you accountable to make sure that you are as well.
Right. So I hear a couple things already, Brent. One, there's an aspect of you that's hard to satisfy. But the way that I hear that is, you're a person that's in motion, and in motion for you is growth. And you're a person that's able to acknowledge that. You got the perspective enough to see that you're on a bigger journey, and you're talking about transformation. You're a person that has made a pretty significant leap outside of the military. And you're talking about being in a position to grow and to transform. Has it always been that case, or was there a moment in your life where suddenly that part of you started speaking? It was like, you know what? I really want to make this an important part of my journey. And if there was, where did it show up and what was going on in your life?
I grew up in Dallas and did my undergrad education at Southern Methodist University, double major in finance and economics, and was going to work as a financial analyst for a couple years, get my MBA, go back into finance, and get a white picket fence and a wife, a yellow lab, and a couple kids, and that was the vision. Close friends were finance majors going into finance, and I took a job as a financial analyst with a large commercial real estate investment firm. Stir my silence with your grief. My dad has been in the real estate investment advisory business his entire career, big business in Dallas. And, you know, with that group of friends at the time, if you didn't have a job by Christmas break of senior year, you were a loser. So everybody was scrambling to find their jobs. And then, of course, you can slack off the entire second semester of senior year. And so I landed that job through a series of interviews and through that network. So it just kind of organically happened based on, you know, the world I was living in. And so this friend of mine who was going to graduate, join the Navy and try out for the SEAL program, I thought that was exciting, adventurous, highly unrealistic as a career path.
Yeah.
And while I was working as an analyst and he was a senior, we started training together. But then I started reading every book I could find on the history of the SEAL teams, from underwater demolition teams in World War II to Korea, Vietnam, and started really becoming fascinated with the history, with the culture. We started working out harder and harder, and pretty soon over time, my close friends, family, and colleagues started realizing that it was a possible dynamic career path shift of my own. Huh. So. Literally, it came down to one day, I wrote my parents a letter, back when people wrote letters, and told them I was quitting my job and enlisting in the Navy. That was the first time in my life that I really made a decision to take a big leap of faith, to take some calculated risk, and pursue what became a passionate dream and vision. That was very risky, but that I didn't want to have that regret later on in life. And that was sort of a pivotal moment where I realized that you can take calculated risk. You can push the boundaries of your comfort zone to do hopefully extraordinary things. As we say in the SEAL teams, if you can get comfortable being uncomfortable, then you continually expand the confines and boundaries of your comfort zone to find whatever your own path for success is.
You're going backwards in your story, and you're talking about being a person that obviously was connected and driven already, but there was a sense of pressure there. Some of that was connected to your family of origin, it sounds like. So your family is connected to the business world, and here you are thinking about taking this, not just a big risk in terms of a life path, in terms of a financial path or any sort of thing like that, in terms of a career. We're talking about something that's putting your life at risk, right? So what did it look like for you to have those conversations, and what did it do for you as you were moving forward?
It was uncomfortable at first, obviously. You know, I was taking a big risk let's face it, my parents were thrilled that I had a job, period, right after college. And it was, you know, for a job right out of school, it was a relatively lucrative, you know, analyst position. And to leave that and put all that on hold, essentially, for an indefinite period of time to enlist in the Navy. So you're basically, as you know, it's basically volunteer work because you hardly get paid anything. Right. And coupled with the risk of knowing the attrition rate of SEAL training, chances are, if you're just looking at it from a purely mathematical standpoint, that I'm putting my career in the business world on hold for at minimum 4 or 5 years, to probably not make it through SEAL training, be stuck in the Navy doing a job I probably don't want to do. You know, there's going to be some naysayers there being like, you'll never make it. Nobody makes it through that program. This is a bad choice. Think about what you're doing with your life. And then, of course, the dangers of training pipeline alone, much less the job. And a couple things happened, which is kind of unusual during our classes, Hell Week, which, listeners who don't know, is the brutal crucible in the fourth week of this 18-month training pipeline that weeds out the majority of the class. I'll explain Hell Week real briefly. As you know, it starts on a Sunday. Typically, the class will report to the classroom Sunday morning, and it ends on a Friday afternoon. This is awful. The anxiety and the anguish is eating away at your soul. Because you know it's going to possibly be one of the worst weeks of your entire life yet. You know, the dichotomy is you just wanted to start.
Do you remember what you were thinking?
Yeah, just your self-talk is just devouring your mind. One of our class leaders' name is Lieutenant John Scott. He read to us out loud the St. Crispin's Day speech from William Shakespeare's Henry V. And if you recall those famed lines that say, "We few, we happy few, we band of brothers. For he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. And those men afraid to go shall see themselves as lesser men as they hear of how we fought and died together." He read that to us on Sunday, and he died on Thursday morning. Long story short, we were in the pool doing relay races with full gear on, and he had a massive heart failure and drowned in the pool next to us. It was a vivid moment because not just the loss of a friend, our leader, but when they were addressing the class, announcing us a couple hours later that he had been pronounced dead, obviously the exhaustion, the emotion of the moment and the years that have passed have caused me to forget the exact verbiage that was used, but the commanding officer, Buds, talked to us about this, and he was talking to us about the importance of banding together as a team, rallying around this adversity, because this is what it will be like in the SEAL teams. You're going to lose teammates. You'll experience severe pain, disappointment, depression. And you really have to trust each other as a team, as a unit. And it was, if you look back now, it was a bit of odd foreshadowing, because 4 months later was 9/11. When, of course, we all knew we'd be going to war soon.
Let me track what you're talking about, because this is a really powerful moment, not just in terms of what it means for a team to address the loss of a life, but in terms of your own emotional journey and in your life journey and your career path. So here you are, a lifetime achiever. Clearly, you get into school, you're already performing, you're doing well. You already are in a mindset where a possibility like being a Navy SEAL comes into the picture, which is, ain't easy, right? And there's very few people even put that on their platter as a possibility. So you're tracking on this super high achiever's path. You flex against your family just a little bit to cross this barrier. You're showing some emotional integrity to enter into SEALs. You have enough resilience to make it to this point of training where now you're confronting a much deeper crucible than just Hell Week. You're facing this crucible, what it means to forge your own integrity as a human being on your own personal growth path. So you lose a cherished leader, but also on the other side of that, you're addressing, if I want this, I have to find a way to continue to move forward. And you didn't know where you were going at the time. You didn't even know you were going to make it, right? So you persisted on. That's a considerable low point at an early stage of your journey that could have really sent you off track really fast. So what did it look like after that?
SEAL training doesn't stop when someone passes. So we're on the speeding freight train, and I was blessed enough to, of the over 200 students that started, 23 of us graduated, went on to the advanced portion of training. 9/11 had just kicked off.
It's 8:52 here in New York. I'm Brian Rumble. We understand that there has been a plane crash on the southern tip of Manhattan. You're looking at the.
And then I went on with a couple guys from my Buds class to SEAL Team 5. And then, of course, Iraq was imminent.
War in the Middle East. Here's what we know and what we don't. U.S. fighter bombers.
As you know, in the military, it's, you don't know what you're doing or where you're going, usually till you're on the plane heading there, because things change at the speed of war. And we didn't know if we're going on a CENTCOM deployment, a PAYCOM deployment. Everybody wanted to go to CENTCOM because that's where the conflicts were, and that's where our nation's business was being conducted. And we finally got the word that we would be the first task unit. We now call them troops, but usually a combination of two platoons, so about 30 to 40 SEALs. We would be the first task unit deployed into Iraq in 2003. So right after the city fell, we were the first task unit operating in and around Baghdad, Ramadi, Fallujah, working back in directly in conjunction with OGA, or other government agencies, we'll call them. As our intel gathering source, we would act on that intel, basically what we call capture or kill missions, basically rounding up all the guys on blacklist. You know, we're even the more senior guys within the teams at the time, nobody other than some of the East Coast teams and Tier 1 assets that went to Afghanistan, nobody had been to war before. We were essentially rewriting the book on urban combat, post-quarters combat, and it's very dangerous. It's very difficult to process what you're doing, the things you have to do, the things you see, and the friends you lose.
Can we land the plane just a little bit? You're painting a really amazing picture for our listeners in terms of what the big picture of the challenges and the transitions are. For you, as you're on this journey of, you decide to basically go on a big adventure for yourself, right? And you're seeing it fulfilling this part of this hunger for yourself, or maybe there's ambition that's all wrapped up in this idea. I'm going to become the hero, right? But now you're doing the dirty work. You're on a plane and you're heading to war. What changed about you in that time period? What are you telling yourself and what's getting you through?
The real catalyst of that transformation for most people starts when they really start experiencing sustained combat, taking lives, losing friends, and those incidences will immediately transform someone. And that's obviously that's part of the sacrifice. It's part of service. It's something we accept. But it's a big transition in your reality when you realize, no, this ain't the movie. I don't feel like a hero. I feel getting out of the teams when I did, for the things that I did and had to do when I was in the teams, the people I couldn't save, the friends that I've lost. And just in general, I guess, overarching, for you feel guilty for being alive because your brothers are. Mm-hmm. So it's that part of the journey that you have to eventually accept. And those that don't accept it obviously can really struggle. I mean, you know.
I just want to make sure I get the I from you rather than the we. Is it your buddies that are helping you get through? Are you reaching out to your family? What really helped for you?
Within the culture of the special operations community, if you're taking lives, you're losing people, we don't really talk about it. You know, we focus on the mission, you know? And so that, I wouldn't necessarily say leaning on each other, you know, you're not going to sit down with one of your brothers and say, here is how I feel right now after taking something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You cry in private. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and that takes a toll, right?
It does, and it takes an even deeper toll when you are fearful of someone else seeing you feel emotion.
Right.
And I think we're trying to work towards changing that piece of culture within the community and actually have, you know, on-site, you know, therapists and counselors at the teams and yoga instructors and all these health and wellness things to help people really deal with a lot of these things more proactively, as opposed to 10 years later when you're self-medicating it.
Right.
And, you know, waking up to violent dreams every night. I would say really initially it was my faith, not so much my family, because I didn't really want to talk about those types of things in any detail with them. So,
yeah, you're saying faith. So your faith in God, I'm hearing, did I get that right? Okay. But you're also talking about something that's a complex topic, because to do what you do, what SEALs do, what anybody in the military does, especially people operating at the level of special forces, you have to take on an identity that allows you to do what you do. And when you begin to open up about the impact of it, you're putting that identity at risk in some sense. So it's a complicated thing to be able to talk about emotions in that process. I'll track really quick. College, SEALs, you have a significant crossroads already in training. You build some emotional integrity through that and you continue to move forward. You happen to be in when the Iraqi war starts, right? So bam, you go to the Iraqi war. You're facing what it looks like to do the job, and you're saying your faith helped you get through, as well as just the practicality of doing your job amongst peers that are capable of doing what they do. So when you were in the military, did you get a sense of a bigger mission already that was playing out? Or were you just like, this is where I'm going to be forever? Or what was going on?
I'd say about 80% of my mindset was to continue on the life plan that I had, which was not to be a career SEAL, but to serve and do my time. And then graduate school. So getting an MBA and then finding a path either through that program or back into business or real estate development or what have you. And this was a couple of years before the housing market imploded and the global economy collapsed. So things were looking good. A lot of great opportunities out there.
Yeah.
But this was, it's actually interesting because this was another pivotal time, because when I went to graduate school, I had absolutely no ambitions or vision for being an entrepreneur at all whatsoever. But I ended up meeting my former in the program, and we started the concepts of our first business, which was actually a project for one of our finance classes. A very overly complex, you know, 150-page business plan that we ended up throwing in the trash and simplifying it. And so, you know, I decided once again, I think if I hadn't had that previous experience of taking that calculated risk of, you know, trying out for the SEAL program, I probably would never have taken the leap of faith and calculated risk to becoming an entrepreneur, which, as we know, it has about the same attrition rate as SEAL training. From a success standpoint. And so we decided to go all in on that, which was scary because my GI Bill paid for about one third of my program, student loans, no money.
So like Mark Devine, who is the Navy SEAL that I interviewed before you, there appears to be more to you as well, meaning Mark and you both want to express or teach growth and transformation through leadership. Was that always something that was part of who Brent Gleason was, meaning that there was an interest in finding a way to get into a career track where transformation and growth was part of it? Or was that a fire that got lit when you were in Navy SEALs? Where did that come from?
I think that actually it's interesting if you even take it back to college. I was a rugby player for 4 years. I was at SMU, and my junior year, I got voted in to be the captain of the rugby team. And I held that position, and I was shocked. I was utterly shocked. I had no idea that people saw me as a leader. And, you know, if I reflect back, I think I was probably a terrible leader if I think about how I've grown, you know, in that capacity today. But there was apparently something there that people saw in me. And then in the SEAL teams, there was some of that, obviously, that quality there. But I think it was really more so when I became an entrepreneur. And like, if you're growing a business that requires employees, you become someone that must inspire, that must lead, that must motivate, engage the team, emotionally connect them to the mission narrative and the vision of the organization. And that was another transition, because first have to obviously learn to lead yourself. And to be more self-aware. And really, I think the best leaders out there are lifelong learners. They actively invest in developing their emotional intelligence, their ability to connect with people. Humility is a big one. And if you don't have it, you'll get it quick. And empathy are great qualities of good leadership. I've learned these things over time by failing at them, really. It's actually a funny story. One of the most eye-opening moments of my phenomenal leadership journey. I hope you're picking up on the sarcasm. First company, we were doubling in size, some years tripling in size, both in revenue and headcount, which is a great problem to have. But I finally realized, and this is a big part, as you know, of, you know, special operations culture, but we lean heavily into peer-to-peer feedback, very, very brutally honest, transparent feedback. And I hadn't really instilled that in the culture of my now new company. And I realized, well, let's enlist some feedback from the team. Let's start a 360 review process to validate how badass I am as a leader and how awesome this company is. So we start a 360 review process. We were only 50 employees at the time, or a few years in. We started out the process with just the you know, the top C-level folks and VPs and above. And it was to enlist feedback on us as leaders, as well as, you know, well, how can we improve the business, the organization, systems, process, culture, and things like that. And feedback came in, printed out my 360 analysis report, hopped on a plane to New York. And I was so excited to read this, because I knew it was clearly just going to validate all the things I already knew about how great I was as a leader, how great the company was, because clearly there were no problems. We're growing, right? Sales are good. Revenue is growing. Let's just say I almost cried the entire time I was reading this 360. And I had lost some of that thick skin that I had grown in the teams, because, you know, we believe heavily in very transparent feedback, upward management, upward leadership. And I had lost some of that. I had become soft. So it was rough. It was a big gut punch. There was some good stuff in there, but there was the places in these 360s for comments. Sometimes there'll be like three paragraphs that looks terrifying to read. And one of, you know, some of the big comments, you know, were like,
"What does Brent do all day?"
Another one was,
"What is the whole purpose behind this company? Why do we exist? Why do we come to work every day?"
Clearly, in my mind, I had been articulating this vision perfectly to everyone,
sure,
day in and day out. They didn't know what the hell was going on. They didn't know what the hell I even did as the CEO every day. So, after 5 or 6 cocktails and some tearful moments, I opened my laptop and built a presentation on, here's what I'm hearing. Is this accurate? And here's what I'm going to do based on what you're telling me to improve myself as a leader and improve this company.
This is great, because this is going to take us into the next segment of the show. But I got to stick up for you a little bit here. So I would call this your second crisis. Your first is your identity's challenged when you face the reality of death when you're stepping into SEALs, when a leader passes, as somebody that you cared about. Your second crisis comes when you make this leap outside of SEALs and you're confronted, right? You're confronted with the reality of the people around you and how they're perceiving you. But here's a big difference that I hear. One of the benefits of going through something like the Navy SEALs is you're given a crucible moment where you don't have to guess if trust is there. The experience provides it. So you had that in terms of the value of your connection with your peers in the SEALs. But now you make this leap outside of SEALs and you're taking on a big transition, which is, now I'm going to become the leader of this entity that we're going to create in business, and we're going to bring it to success. But you're confronted with a difference, and it's about culture and it's about connecting to people. So here you're on your second crisis, and I want to ask you, where did things start to get easier for you? Because that's the point of the show. You're about ready to take a leap of innovation, and it came in a very uncomfortable moment. Your employees basically say, "What's going on here, jackass?" Right? And you're like, "Oh my God!" The confrontation happens, but you're already taking action, which shows the resilience and strength that you may have gained through your previous leadership experiences in the military. So, what did it look like, and where did things really start to become easier for you?
So, at that moment, there was a bit of a transition growth, obviously, in my journey as a leader for that organization. One caveat is most of the employees in both the previous companies that I've run were millennials. So that was a whole nother different journey.
Right. So there's a generational gap. Were you married at the time too? Did you have a family?
Yes. I had it was a practice marriage. It was a warm up to my wonderful marriage.
So you had you had a significant relationship at the time.
Yes, a disastrous one.
Okay.
None of which, of course, is my fault. But long story short, that we were growing that company, and then it was basically a, just for context, it was a kind of an early version of Zillow or Trulia. It was a home finding search engine. Mm-hmm. And the housing market was booming. It was clearly not a bubble, and we were going to ride this thing all the way to heaven's gates. Mm-hmm. And then the housing market imploded in 2008. Another gut punch. So we decided to diversify ourselves a little bit. We had learned so much about digital marketing, online media, lead generation. So we started we raised more money and started a digital marketing agency. And essentially now running two companies in a bad marriage with a child. And then there was things escalating there as well. I'll spare the listeners the gory details.
It's okay, but we can do
to
that.
To put it mildly, I literally was transformed into a full-time single dad of a 2.5-year-old overnight. Literally overnight. Uh-huh. There was obviously severe addiction problems on her part, which led to severe infidelity problems and more addiction problems, alcohol, cocaine, partying. And of course, obviously, I had my blinders on. I was a busy entrepreneur. I'm sure there was 7 layers of denial that were going on there as well. And it culminated obviously into this moment where, yeah, let's just get raw. I had private investigators follow her. Literally, I had a team, and part of that team was a guy and a girl in the club partying with her.
Yeah.
And then it got so bad that they were ended up like at a crack house. This team were like, Brent, I'm not even going in there. Mm-hmm. That's how bad it got. So yeah. She packed up her stuff and started, still mind lost from the night before, and started driving up to Sacramento from San Diego. So I called her brother, who was a police officer. He flew down to LA, met her there, and then that was it. She was gone, baby gone, off to rehab, and kind of looked over at my son like, so where does mom keep your socks?
Right. She's getting a degree, majoring in botany, but she's not on a fool ride. She's got her own business on the side, 'cause she's got a PhD in money laundering, computer hacking and drug trafficking. She's got a chauffeur and a limousine.
I worked in the addiction industry for 10 years. So what you're talking about is there's often estrangement and fragmentation that's happening way before the realization of what's going on is happening. And you're talking about your life at another crisis. You said after the second crisis, things got worse, and they did. But part of your story, which is important for our listeners to hear, is there's multiple relationships that are happening during the life journey, and they all feed into crisis, right? So there's not just the crisis of you showing up at business every day, and having to face a market that's turning on you. You're saying, here I was, a SEAL operating at a super high level, step into a business, make this leap. I'm confronted with a confrontation that things aren't working well. But then the listener's now starting to hear, well, by the way, this was also going on underneath. So perhaps some of the detachment that you were feeling in your professional environment and what people were seeing was part of also your story, which is, I'm not really connected to what's happening with my own relationship right now. Maybe because I didn't want to see it, or it's too ugly, or whatever. So pretty, pretty awesomely hard stuff to talk about, but you're talking about it. So now you're a single dad with a business that looks like it's taking a downturn. Your partner's caught in the crisis of addiction. So she's on her own thing. That's going to take a while to come back from. You're looking at your son like, okay, I'm daddy mama now. Where do things start to get easier?
So I had to prioritize something. And obviously I chose to prioritize raising my son, which would take me away from the two businesses that I was supposed to be running. I had a business partner, but we had totally different sides of the fence as far as our responsibilities and roles in the organization. And as the CEO, ultimately I was the leader. So it got to the point where I was taken away from the business so much. And that was by choice. I could only utilize babysitters and nannies so much. But had to put Tyler in preschool full time and race to the office and pick him up, you know, a moon or two, depending on how old he was at the time. This went on for several years. It came to a point where I had to make a very tough decision to, I removed myself as CEO of the business, knowing that I probably would never regain that position. I was in an organization called Vistage at the time, like a CEO. They're kind of like a YPO, but like a CEO group. You have your group of 15 to 17 members, all CEOs, business owners. It's kind of like a self-help group for CEOs.
Right.
My mentor was avidly opposed to me making this decision. Mm-hmm. He's like, don't do it. You'll never get that title back. And I believe it was the right thing to do because I was not fulfilling that leadership responsibility and then the way it needed to be fulfilled. And I had to prioritize my son. That was a no-brainer. But that was very, it was humbling. It was very difficult. It was a difficult thing to announce and then transition into a different role. But it was the right thing to do. Ironically, all of these things culminating actually exacerbated my post-traumatic stress symptoms. So I started going to therapy, which was great, but you know, we never really talked about the real stuff. I'm not sure why she never took it in that direction. We never really got real. We talked more of like the here and now, like what's happening today, this week. So never got to dive deep into sort of some of these root causes. Never talked about war at all for some reason, even though she knew my background.
So on the other side of this, you're having to face perhaps what it looks like to quit. And one thing that people might not be aware of in terms of the mindsets of people that enter things like the Navy SEALs or any special forces, there's a fixed mindset on when it comes to achievement. And it takes that level, it takes that kind of dedication to do what you end up doing. So here you are, and I know I can hear why that those emotions came back, is because you're facing perhaps death of your own image at that point in time, right? Like, so you're like, oh my God, I'm going to step away from CEO, which you do because you know what's best for you and your son, which shows a shit ton of integrity. You step outside of that, here's this rush of emotions that come in. And now you're having all of, you're having the dynamics of having to leave an identity piece as CEO, but also to remake a life as the head of your family.
So also kind of a funny story. There were two weddings. One was my close buddy from high school and college, big wedding in Houston. My parents were even invited to that wedding. There was another wedding in Costa Rica, one of my best friends from both Buds and SEAL Team 5. And so I'm thinking, wedding in Houston, wedding in Costa Rica. I made the right choice. So I decided to go to the wedding in Costa Rica. It was going to be a smaller wedding, just some guys from the teams and obviously some of the bride's, you know, close friends and family. They rented out a boutique hotel kind of area. I get there, I think it was, you know, Thursday. I think the wedding party had been there for a day or two already. I arrive, not a soul there. The wedding party was out at dinner. I'm like, great, this is going to suck. So I'm sitting by myself, eating some chicken in the restaurant, literally by myself. And then the wedding party rolls in. And this gorgeous, unbelievably gorgeous girl literally walks up to my table, sits down and says, "So what's your story?" I literally looked around like you must have me confused with someone else. And that is my wife. Uh-huh. And this is another big leap of faith and calculated risk. 2 days later, while we're still in Costa Rica, I told her, and I believed this to be true, that we were going to get married, that we were destined to be married. And I was a single dad who needed a shitload of help. So, those two things combined.
She heard it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's probably listening to this right now on the other end, getting real pissed. But I believe that to be true. A month after the wedding, we got matching tattoos. And then 2 months after that, yeah, we did the matching tattoos before the engagement. I don't know. We
not recommended for you folks.
Yeah, I do not recommend anybody else nor my children to ever do something as stupid as that. 2 months after the matching tattoo, so 3 months after we met, we got engaged. A week after that, we got married at the courthouse, and we had the big wedding the following summer. So it's been, and that was literally, not to sound corny, but that was the massive transition into healing, into regaining respect for myself, to love for myself, to help really, it eased my anxiety and gave me a renewed sense of purpose. I started performing better as a leader at work. And then she got pregnant immediately. And so we started, you know, having more kids. So it's, you know, time to step up, time to get over your self-pity and wake the hell up and take life, you know, by the horns again. And it's literally ever since, you know, that moment, it's been, you know, life's not perfect, but it's been an upward trajectory. And my wife will remind me of this. She's like, I'm the reason you're so confident.
She's right. But it's a dance. So you two together is what allows life to get better.
I think this would be a good time to just slow down and illustrate for the listeners, like what the turning point is. Your wife is referring to herself. I think she's got some insight into where things started to turn around for you. However, I would clarify that I don't see your wife as the turning point. I see her as like the icing on the cake. I really think your turning point was the moment you surrendered your position as CEO. Having fallen on my ass and buds, and I referred to this earlier, I think I got just a teeny bit of insight into what it takes to succeed in that program. And you're one of those persons. Here you are, a lifelong achiever, and you did what you're programmed not to do. The real leap of innovation for you was surrendering. And you did it for all the right reasons. You surrendered to care for your son, to become the single parent and put your family on your shoulder and commit to the care of them. So you turn the page, you go to your friend's wedding, and fate comes and sits down and strikes up a conversation with you. And she ends up being your wife. Things really seem to turn around after that point.
Where do you see yourself going? What's important to you now? Where do you want to take us?
The transition, there's been, you know, more transitions as a more or less a serial entrepreneur. I sold the second company in late 2016 with the goal for 2017 to transition full time into speaking, consulting, and writing my first book. I think ultimately the part of my journey as an entrepreneur is to, and I've always said this, and again, not to sound corny or cliche, but to work hard enough doing things that I'm passionate about that add value to other people's lives, but work hard enough so that someday I start to gradually have the flexibility, the time, and even the financial resources to give back to causes that I'm passionate about. So I've been on the executive board of the Seal Family Foundation for several years now. It's a way for me to, and to be honest, it's kind of therapeutic. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that makes sense to you. Mm-hmm. Because it's a way to continue to serve. Because, you know, I left the teams. My brothers are still fighting. And so for me, it's a way to continue to serve, give back to the community. We support the families of our active and fallen operators. Family resilience is our ultimate mission. And we're also an ambassador family for the March of Dimes. And I also, even more fun, as I mentor guys into and through Buds. I've got a string of young guys that I mentor and mentor them through the Buds program. So those things combined are one of the reasons I try to work so hard, is so that I have the flexibility and the resources to give my time and a lot of my own money to the NSW community and to some of these other causes that are that we're passionate about.
So what do you want to tell our listeners is your key takeaway for where things started to get easier for you? If you could offer them one suggestion, who knows what their crisis looks like? Who knows where they're uncomfortable right now? Who knows what they're dealing with? But you made a significant transition to get into a place where your life's more comfortable, you're expressing yourself more fully, you're engaging yourself as a leader. What would you suggest to them, and what helped you?
As one of my and probably one of your Buds instructors once said, embrace the suck. Leaning into the pain, not shying away from it. But one of the things that I really believe in is that, and this is a lot of what the second book is about, is we have a choice to make on how we suffer and what we suffer for by the decisions that we make in life. So if you're, I mean, obviously SEAL training is an easy analogy, as I chose that suffering for a higher purpose, for a higher cause, like you did. But we also choose, we make poor decisions in life based on sometimes a shitty set of values, and we suffer, we choose that suffering based on those bad decisions, based on oftentimes a bad set of moral convictions. So I really think it's really about auditing, not just once, but maybe even continually auditing your value set and your value system, thinking about what you care about, what is the purpose that you want to fulfill in your life, and essentially what your list of regrets that you'll have on your deathbed is up to you. It really is up to you. And so why leave that to chance? You know, find a purpose in your life, find a value set that you can also share with a partner, and really lean into that and make decisions based on it. And just know that there is adversity and suffering in life, but you get to choose what you suffer for and how you suffer.
So let's say it's 20 years down the road. You and your wife are sitting on a beach. You're checking out each other's tattoos. You're like, they're still in good shape. And you're having a good laugh. Your relationship's going well. And your three children show up. And they're not children anymore, but they have grandchildren. And they turn and they say to you, they say, Grandpa, we're hearing a lot about success, but we have no idea what that means. What would you tell them success means?
I think I would tell my grandchildren, maybe my perspective will change over the following 20 years, but if I had to answer that question right now, which of course I do, I would say that, and obviously this isn't always easy and perspectives change, but is if you can find a passion and purpose for something bigger than yourself, something that, and that can be through, you know, work that you get paid to do, whatever it is, but if you can, I'm not just talking about charitable work and volunteerism, but if you can find a passion and a purpose and a cause to give to, at least during a period of your life or throughout your entire life, it's bigger than yourself, you're going to find a way to live a very fulfilling, purpose-driven life. And that's, simply put, that's how I would say it. I wouldn't obviously tell them what to pursue or how to pursue it. That's their own journey, but kind of goes back to what I was saying about choosing what you suffer for. Just like we chose to serve in the military. Service in the military comes with suffering, but you chose that suffering. It's not about you. It's about service for others. And it's very, even that level of pain is fulfilling in a way. Maybe that's hard to digest for some of the listeners, but that type of pain and suffering is quite fulfilling in an odd way, because you know it has meaning, and it has meaning that has nothing to do with you and your own selfish desires.
Brent Gleason, thank you for joining me on the Pioneers of Insight podcast today. It was truly an honor.
Thank you, my friend. It was an honor. It was a pleasure, and hope to do it again someday.
All right, folks, that's a wrap. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave a review on whatever platform you're listening to. This just helps put it in the hands of the people likely to get something out of it. If you'd like to dig a little deeper and see what we got cooking here at TUI Media, you can visit our website at tuimedia.com. Wishing you grace to fill your sails today. Stay great in the meantime, and I'll see you on the next Pioneers of Insight.
Done. If you can get comfortable being uncomfortable, and you continually expand the confines and boundaries of your comfort zone, you can find whatever your own path for success is.